Ladies and gentlemen, welcome along to session 6 of our lifestyle maintenance program. It's great to have you on the call. Just so that you know, I've got a little bit of a storm happening here at the moment. So if something happens to go amiss, don't hang up. The phone won't die anyway. That's a given. But hopefully we'll weather the storm here. So welcome along to a very interesting session. Today we're going to be talking about the most basic of all foods, which is a potato. And the reason why I've chosen this subject is there's always questions about potatoes. So I've decided that we're going to delve into it a little bit and work out what the truth is in regards to eating potatoes. Okay, so I'm sure that'll be interesting. But before we get going, I just want to talk about call quality a little bit. There is quite a few people on the call, and any background noise that you might have, everybody else will hear. Okay, so there are a few things that you can do to solve that issue. The first thing is just be aware if you've got dishes in the background, dogs barking, kids running around, everybody will hear it. And to mute that out, you can actually do that by hitting *6 on your phone. *6 will mute it out. Now, if you do have a quiet background, please don't mute yourself because it makes it easier for me. It's nice to be able to hear some sort of background thing happening somewhere, even if it is just an open line, because that ensures that, you know, I know that the call's still running properly. Now, if you want to say something, because the idea of these calls is if when we're running through these calls and through the information and everything else, if you want to ask a question, you can. So just interrupt or interject, whatever you want to call it. But to do that, if you're muted, unless you hit *6, we won't know that you're talking to us. So you have to remember to unmute yourself if you want to say something. Okay?
Good evening, Peter. It's Andrew here.
How are you, Andrew?
Very good, actually.
Now, if the call drops at any stage, do not hang up. If I drop out, I have got a storm here at the moment, I will call back. If you drop out, definitely just dial back. It does happen sometimes that the phones can drop out. The minute you dial back, you'll be rejoining the call. So *6 to mute yourself, *6 to unmute yourself, and if something happens with the call at your end, dial back in. If I drop out, do not hang up. I'll be dialing back in within a few seconds.
Okay.
I just want to very quickly run through what we're covering tonight. So first of all, welcome along, everyone. It's really great to be running these calls. I actually enjoy these calls because during these calls, we get to talk about stuff that we don't talk about in the program because there's just not enough time, which is really strange to say, right, because the program runs for 12 weeks. And there's so much more that we can cover, you know. And so I enjoy these programs because we actually look at things in a little bit more depth. So welcome along.
Thank you.
We're going to do a very quick review from last month in a minute. We're going to give you a very quick update on current programs. I'm also going to talk about what to do as a sponsor. There are some sponsors on the program at the moment. I just want to mention a couple of things there. And then we're going to look at potatoes. And I've put a question mark there because there's a lot of questions around potatoes. Should we not? Then we're going to wrap the session up I'll give you an insight as to what we're doing in a month's time from now. So I just want to mention who is on the call. Generally speaking, the majority of people on this call have completed the program. Okay, now just so that you're aware, there will most likely be a few people on the call that have not completed the program. So I just need to make everybody aware of that. But of course you can talk quite freely and openly. The purpose of these calls. The purpose of these calls is twofold. Like I said, we don't get the opportunity to delve into depth with a lot of these subjects on the program. So it's a learning exercise. And that's important because it gives us more knowledge and a better idea of what we should or should not be doing, or some of the things that we can do to improve our health and maintain our health. But the other purpose of the call is these get-togethers, they allow us to do things as a group and they keep you on track for the next month. So that's the purpose of these calls. The Lifestyle Maintenance Program, this is a part of the Lifestyle Maintenance Program. As I've said previously, we will be expanding it greatly. You will see some pretty amazing things happen, but this is a part. This call is a part of the Lifestyle Maintenance Program. So, very quickly, I'd just like to do a review from last month so that we have an idea and we sort of remember what we did last month. So last month, we actually spoke about rice, which is an interesting subject. And if you haven't listened to that call, it is online. The notes are online. I would encourage you to do so because it's quite an interesting subject, rice. In today's landscape, it can be a problematic thing. We actually discovered what rice is. We looked at white rice versus brown rice. And of course, the less processed it is, the better off we are. We learnt how rice ends up being white. We actually went through the whole process of what happens. And we discovered that white rice is actually just a simple carb, just like all other processed foods. That's what white rice equates to. We discussed which are the best rices to eat based on GI, or glycemic index. Now, GI, we'll be talking about the GI today a little bit as well. So the GI is how quickly food metabolizes into sugars. So we looked at rice in the context of how quickly it turns into sugar. Again, it is a case of eating non-processed foods. It really is. At the end of the day, however we look at it and however we approach it, whichever way we turn, when we look at what we put in our mouth, if it's not processed, it seems to be safe. If it is processed, it's probably not too good for our health. Predominantly because it spikes our insulin levels in an unusually quick amount of time, unnaturally quick amount of time, and it spikes them to unnaturally high levels. And that's what factory-made foods actually do to us. So just before we get moving into our content for today, is there any questions? I'll just open the call for 10, 15 seconds. If you'd like to ask a question, please do *6 to unmute yourself.
No, I don't think so. I haven't got any.
I'm assuming that means no questions. Okay. So let's get into today's content, because today's content is actually very interesting. Today, like I said, we're actually talking about potatoes. Now, why potatoes? Why would we want to talk about such a basic food? When we say potatoes really are probably the world's most used and most basic food. Probably not too dissimilar to rice, although rice is used more in the Asian areas, as we discovered last month. Potatoes is something we don't think twice about. Everybody eats potatoes, especially in the Western world. So the question now becomes, what is the story with potatoes? Should we not be eating them? Are they good for us? Are they not good for us? Are potatoes good or bad? That is the most basic question. So, potatoes have long been considered the most basic of basic foods, a no-frills staple for the every man and every woman. One reason potatoes have earned this distinction is no doubt their low cost, but another may be that their basic nutritional qualities. They are fat, sodium and cholesterol free, which is quite amazing. And a medium-sized potato contains just 110 calories. That sounds really good, right? Nevertheless, the reputation of potatoes has taken a hit lately due to their relatively high glycemic index, which means that the carbohydrate in them is quickly converted to glucose when digested. Many people with diabetes take glycemic index into account when deciding what foods to incorporate into their diet. We have heard things like, which we'll be talking about a little bit later, you know, potatoes cause diabetes. Interesting question, right? We'll be discovering that today, whether that's the case or not. So as with a lot of these bits that we look at, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have a look at some research, because to answer these questions about potatoes, we really can't be guessing. We really have to start delving into some research and see what's actually been discovered about this interesting food. So the American College of Nutrition did a fascinating bit of research. And here it is. So, how good or bad are potatoes when it comes to weight control and glucose tolerance? Interesting question. Generally, we think that people that eat a lot of potatoes are gaining a lot of weight. That's the general perception. I guess along with that, people also imagine that with the weight gain, the glucose tolerance becomes questionable. Metabolic syndrome starts to kick in, that sort of thing. The question is this true or not? So a study examining these topics was published a while ago by the Journal of American College of Nutrition. Very well-known journal. According to an article on the study in the Daily Mail, the effect of potatoes on weight control may be modestly positive. Okay? Interesting way of framing it. So this is how the study actually ran. Researchers assigned 90 overweight participants to one of three groups. Two of these groups, I'm just going to pause here. Has everybody got the screen yet?
It's got potatoes are good or bad.
And that's it? That's all you've got?
Yep.
Okay, let me go back. Oh, here we go. Might be my little storm thing happening here. Okay, we'll just give it a few seconds. Hopefully it'll come up. So just listen in while I'm reading it out. So researchers assigned 90 overweight participants to one of three groups. Two of these groups, that's interesting, okay, I've just flipped the screen again. Okay, researchers assigned 90 overweight participants to one of three groups. Two of these groups were taught how to reduce their daily caloric intake by 500 calories. Okay, so imagine 90 overweight people divided up into three groups. And two of these groups have actually been coached and taught on how to reduce 500 calories a day. But one group was taught how to do this by eating mostly high glycemic index foods. So they've actually reduced their calories, but they've got high GI foods. And the other by eating mostly low glycemic index foods. The third group was told not to change anything at all about their caloric intake or glycemic composition of their diet. All three groups were told, however, to consume 5 to 7 servings of potatoes per week. I can see that the screen still hasn't come up. I'm sorry about that. So three groups. One group is shown how to reduce caloric intake by 500 calories, but they're having high glycemic index food. The other group is also reducing by 500 calories, but by having low glycemic index foods. The third group is told to do nothing, but all three groups across this whole thing are having 5 to 7 servings of potatoes a week. Interesting study, right? So, after 12 weeks of following their prescribed diets, there were no... Now, listen to this, right? After 12 weeks of following their prescribed diets, there were no significant differences in the groups in terms of weight loss or body composition. All three groups, however, experienced modest weight loss and improvements in body composition. Since the only dietary change that all three groups had in common was consuming potatoes regularly, it is plausible that the potatoes were responsible for this weight loss. Interesting way of looking at it. But since the study had no control group that changed nothing at all in their diet, it is impossible to say this for sure. After 12 weeks, there was no significant changes seen in participants' triglycerides, glucose tolerance, insulin levels, or insulin sensitivity. Interesting. Since the only dietary change that all three groups had in common was consuming potatoes regularly... Oh, sorry, we've already done this. This slide's come back. Okay. One reason why it's difficult to come to any conclusions on the role of potatoes or the role that potatoes play in glucose control is that they may have very different effects depending on how they're prepared. And here's a very interesting key. I want you to start thinking about this. It has also been shown that different varieties of potatoes have different glycemic indexes. They are also affected by how they're cooked. Interesting. So, let's have a look at the numbers. The numbers range from a GI of 58, which is low to medium GI, for a boiled Nicola potato, to 111. So look at the difference. Now, white bread is 100. So, a boiled Nicola potato is 111, which is extremely high. Or a baked russet Burbank potato has about the same GI. This range in numbers doesn't even take into account the reality that potatoes are often combined in dishes with other ingredients, which can have an enormous effect on their glycemic impact. Adding ingredients containing fat, protein, fibre, and greatly lower GI of food, leading to a more moderate and consistent release of glucose into the bloodstream. So we know that is a low GI food. And there is a wide variety of potatoes. We have all sorts of different potatoes. And the point is, with potatoes, each variety has actually got a different GI. So you can go from the very low GIs, which is what we should be eating, to potatoes which are really high GI. And so it starts to get a little bit confusing. So let's have a look at some GI numbers, what we're actually getting, because this will actually broaden your thinking about this very simple food that we call a potato. So if we look at a potato variety that's been boiled, and its GI, these are some of the things we find. A Charisma potato has got a GI of 55, which is excellent. A Desiree has got 101, which is almost double. And 101 is not good. That's like eating white bread. A Nicola is 58. That's not too bad. A Sebago is 87, and I just accidentally overclicked. There we go. And Pontiac is 89, so somewhere in the mid-range. So we can see that there's a wide variety of different GIs, and I'm not really sure that when we go to the shop and we buy potatoes, anybody really thinks about this. But it's something that we should be taking into consideration. And it's difficult to do. So the question is, are potatoes actually dangerous for us? do they cause a concern? There was a study done, and I think it's on to phase three of the study. Now, it's a very, very long-term study, and it is called the Nurses Health Study. So this is where groups of nurses have been studied over decades, literally decades. And it just so happens that the Nurses Health Study actually looked at the question of potatoes over a very long period of time. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to share this information with you, because now this will start to unpack some of the answers for us in relation to potatoes. So, a prospective study followed 84,555 women. Huge study, 84,000. And it was the famed Nurses Health Study, as I said. At the start, the women were all aged between 34 and 59 years. They had absolutely no history of chronic disease and completed a validated food frequency questionnaire. Okay, so these were healthy women, healthy subjects, and it was ascertained as to what they were eating. These women were then followed for a total of 20 years, which is a very long time, by the way, with repeated assessments of their diet during that period of time. And this is what the study concluded. Our findings suggest a modest positive association between the consumption of potatoes and the risk of type 2 diabetes in women. This association was more pronounced when the potatoes were substituted for whole grains. Interesting. So, let's have a closer look at this study to see just how accurate it actually is, and how accurate these claims are. And we want to really find out where the truth really lies. Specifically, we will look at five key points. In the study, participants were asked how often on average in the previous year they had consumed potatoes. Interesting question. The options they were given to choose from were either A, one baked or one cup of mashed potato, or 4 ounces of French fried potatoes. They were the only two options that they had. Now, given that these were the only choices the subject could pick from, they really could not incorporate any other ways of preparing potatoes. That was the only choice, so what they did was they picked the closest match. So while these may represent how potatoes are most often consumed in America, because this study was done in America, by the way, they do not account for any differences in how potatoes were prepared and served. Mashed potatoes were also counted in with baked potatoes, which are two completely different forms of preparing potatoes, as you know. You see, in most Western countries, whether it is at home or in restaurants, most mashed potatoes are made with milk, butter, and or margarine. In addition, mostly all baked potatoes are served with butter, sour cream, and or cheese. The following analysis represents these important differences. They are of a serving of mashed potatoes, a loaded baked potato, and a plain baked potato as served in a popular national restaurant chain. And this is obviously in the US. Okay, so have a look at this, because you'll be surprised at how things vary. They are typically for how mashed potatoes are baked, and baked potatoes are often served and consumed in America. In addition, we have included the analysis of a plain medium baked potato for comparison. So, what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at these comparisons. I'm going to take you through the restaurants. And then we're going to have a look at a baked potato as you would make it at home with nothing on it. Okay, so let's have a quick look. mashed potatoes in a restaurant, on average, will provide you with 367 calories, 24 grams of fat. 59% of those calories actually come from the fat. 11.4 grams of saturated fat. 28% calories come from the saturated fat. 9 milligrams of cholesterol. And that's not a really good situation. Now we look at loaded baked potatoes, which are extremely popular in the US, but we get them here as well. And they provide you even with more calories. In this case, 505 calories. We're actually climbing. 22 grams of fat. 39% of the calories in a loaded potato comes from fat. 10 grams of saturated fat, that should say. 18% of calories come from the actual saturated fat. So again, quite a large chunk. And they will provide you with 30 milligrams of cholesterol. They've actually climbed up a fair bit. So you can see just by the different forms of preparation, by the different dishes, how they vary in calories, fat and saturated fats and cholesterol. Now let's have a look at a regular baked potato in a restaurant. Okay, so nothing on it, just a straight regular baked potato. It will provide you with 329 calories, 4.5 grams of fat, 12% of calories come from that fat, 0.4 grams of saturated fat, and much less than just a straight baked potato in a restaurant, and 1% of the calories will actually come from the saturated fat. It will, however, provide you with 22 milligrams of cholesterol. So as you go out to a restaurant, to some sort of takeaway place that provides you with potatoes, there's takeaway places that actually make baked potatoes, you can expect to get something resembling what we've just read. Now let's have a look at a situation where you take a potato at home, leave it in its skin, you bake it, and you don't put anything on it. And let's have a look at the difference. So a baked potato at home will provide you with only 160 calories. That's half the calories, right? 0.2 grams of fat. It's virtually no fat. Non-existent. Only 1% of the calories come from that 0.2 grams of fat, 0.1 grams of saturated fat, and only 0.05% of calories come from that saturated fat. This is vastly, vastly different to what you would expect to get when you're eating out. Now, shock horror, the baked potato at home has 0 milligrams of cholesterol, zero, which is hugely different. So the question now is, where on earth are these calories coming from, right? The mashed potato gets more than half its calories plus nearly all of its fat, about 24 grams, and cholesterol, 9 milligrams, from the non-potato ingredients. That's a fact. The loaded potato, on the other hand, gets more than two-thirds of its calories, plus nearly all of its fat, about 22 grams, from the non-potato ingredients. Even the regular baked potato from the restaurant gets half its calories, plus nearly all of its fat, about 4 grams, and cholesterol from non-potato ingredients. Most likely oil and other and or other butter used on the outside of the potato contributes to this, and it's usually used as a regular topping, right? So compared to a at-home plain baked potato, As we can see, the potato is contributing only a small percentage to what is most likely being counted as potatoes. When we go out and we buy something, we say potatoes, and we don't think about what's on the potatoes, especially when it's not really visible. It's sort of soaked in, that sort of thing. And presumably the study that we've just looked at did exactly the same thing. The association applied to potatoes may be more accurately applied to how potatoes are prepared and consumed and the toppings they are served with, more than just the potato itself. And then, on top of all of this, the study also admitted that cooking methods were not assessed. But because the study was done in America, I guess it's safe to assume that they were prepared in ways that American would usually consume potatoes. But that was never really assessed. Other factors about the study. In addition, other studies on the nurses' database show that the majority of their diets are not low-fat, low-saturated fat, low cholesterol, or high fiber, which confirms that they are not choosing or consuming the healthier versions of meals. So these are people that are living the typical Western diet. The big question now is, in the context of what we've just read, in this study, was the potato the problem itself? Or was the potato acting as a marker and pointing to something else that was associated with potato consumption? Very interesting question. Could it be that people that eat potatoes in those sort of amounts also have other habits about their diet that might be contributing factors? Well, this is a very interesting question. Because when we quote the researchers now, the researchers said the following. While potatoes and French fries are large components of the Western pattern diet, this dietary pattern is characterized by a high consumption of red meat, refined grains, processed meat, high-fat dairy products, desserts, high-sugar drinks, and eggs, as well as French fries and potatoes. A Western pattern diet previously predicted a risk of type 2 diabetes. Thus, we cannot completely separate the effects of potatoes and French fries from the effects of the overall Western dietary pattern. So, ladies and gentlemen, in regards to research into potatoes, that's about as good as it gets. That's what we've got. However, the researchers found that the study subjects who ate more potatoes also ate more red meat, more refined grains, and consumed more total calories, in fact, more than 500 additional calories per day. In addition, potato intake was also associated with higher intakes of saturated and trans fat and less physical activity. So it seems that we in the Western diet, according to the research that has been done, where people are eating more potatoes, we've got these habits of having a poor diet. Somehow we've come to a point where people that eat a lot of potatoes seem to have all of these bad habits around them. Quite interesting. I guess the question now becomes, what happens if you have a healthy diet and you eat just potatoes without any of the toppings and everything else? Well, the problem is that we really don't have that information studied concisely like we've got these sort of studies. However, we can start looking at a few things and we can start working a few things out here. And we come to some very interesting conclusions. See, the total US potato consumption per person per year in 1970 was £122. In 1996, it was £145. That actually went up. Consumption of potatoes per capita went up. In 2008, interestingly enough, the consumption of potatoes had actually dropped, and it had dropped to £117. Now, let's have a look at what happened with the diabetic situation. In 1970, there was only a 2% rate of diabetes. In 1996, it had climbed to 2.89, and in 2008, it had climbed to a massive 6.29. Currently, now it's doubled from there again. The interesting thing is that the consumption of potatoes is trending down since 1996, yet the prevalence of diabetes is rising faster than ever. In fact, from 1996 to 2008, potato consumption fell a total of 19%, while the percentage of people with diabetes increased by more than 200%. Interesting statistics. So can we really blame the potato? Most importantly, the prevalence of diabetes really began to increase in 1996 to 1998, which is the same time that potato consumption began to fall sharply. It's almost like the potato consumption began to fall sharply and diabetes went up through the roof. So, conclusions from this, what the researchers have concluded. During the 20 years that the subject in the nurse's study were followed, we saw a dramatic shift in dietary and lifestyle patterns of Americans. Not only has potato consumption and the type of potato changed dramatically, but there have been significant changes in other areas. Americans have sharply increased their consumption of refined sugars, sweeteners, refined grains, carbohydrates, added oils and fats, hydrogenated fats, trans fats, cheese, calories, etc. Meanwhile, the percentage of Americans who are overweight and even obese increased, while the percentage who are active fell dramatically. So now in the context of this, how on earth do you work out whether the potato is the problem? These factors, and this is what the researchers have actually stated at the end of this whole period, these factors, and not the potato itself, are what is responsible for the dramatic increase in the incidence of diabetes. Sure, mashed potatoes, loaded baked potatoes and French fries, which are calorie dense, high in fat, saturated fat, cholesterol, sugar and salt, increases your risk of the disease and should be avoided. Interesting. However, currently, there is no credible evidence that potatoes, when consumed close to their natural state and cooked conservatively by baking, boiling and or steaming, will cause diabetes or are associated with an increased risk. In fact, potatoes have long been a part of healthy diets right around the world. And now, this is where it becomes complicated. We know that different varieties have different GIs. That's a fact. We've looked at that. We know that preparation makes a huge difference. And now, potatoes are used in more processed foods than ever before. If you walk up and down your supermarket aisles, more and more and more products have actually got potatoes in them. They're becoming a staple foundation of many processed foods. So let's just have a look at what's happened with the global use of potatoes. Potatoes are used for a variety of purposes, and you'll be very surprised with how they're used. They're not only used for a vegetable as for cooking at home. In fact, it is likely that less less than 50% of potatoes grown worldwide are consumed fresh. The rest are processed into potato food products and food ingredients fed to cattle, pigs and chickens, processed into starch for industry and reused as seed tubers for growing the next season's potato crop. Global consumption of potato as a food is actually shifting from fresh potatoes to added value processed food products. One of the main items in that category is actually frozen potatoes, which includes most of the French fries or chips, as we call them in the UK and Australia, which are served in restaurants and fast food chains worldwide across the globe. You see, the world's appetite for factory-made French fries has been put at more than 7 million tons a year. Another processed product, the potato crisp, or chips, is as long-standing king of snack foods as in many developed countries. I mean, when haven't we had the chips, right? Another interesting thing that happens with potatoes, dehydrated potato flakes are used in retail mashed potato products, and there's plenty of those, as ingredients in snacks and even as fast food aid. Potato flour, it's another dehydrated product, is used by the food industry to buy meat mixtures and to thicken gravies and soups. You can actually go and buy potato flour that's presented as a very healthy option to wheat flour, as an example. And it's true. Contains no soy, no gluten, none of those sort of things. But the question is, being a processed ingredient, how good is it really? Because it's got an extremely high GI. A fine tasteless powder with excellent mouthfeel, potato starch provides higher viscosity than wheat and maize starches and delivers a more tasty product, which is what food manufacturers are looking for. It is used as a thickener for sauces and stews and as a binding agent in cake mixes, doughs, biscuits and ice cream. I mean, this stuff, potatoes, is creeping in everywhere. The problem is that it's creeping in as a processed ingredient. Another interesting way of using potatoes, believe it or not, absolute vodka. In Eastern Europe and Scandinavia, crushed potatoes are heated to convert their starch to ferment sugars that are used in the distillation of alcoholic beverages, such as vodka, which we're all aware of, and agvavit, which is another interesting alcohol. So that's the story on potatoes. And I guess the question is, so what now? As much as we've been through the majority of the research on potatoes, we do know one thing, that in its natural form, the potato itself is low calorie, low fat, low cholesterol, and if it's the right type of potato, it's actually quite a low GI food. So it actually ticks all the boxes, one after another. The problem with the potatoes is how we actually prepare them. Once we start adding things like butter, margarine to them, we take the skin off them, we mash them up, put milk in them, all that sort of thing, and given the fact that we may have a high GI variety anyway, we can be sending the GI of potatoes through the roof. And of course, that has exactly the same effect, identical effect, as going and having white flour or white rice or white anything. So potatoes can actually be something that you want to avoid. Potatoes should be specifically avoided when it comes to restaurants because it's very, very clear that all of the bad markers around foods that we want to watch out for skyrocket when potatoes are prepared in restaurants. However, if you make a baked potato at home and you have that occasionally, and it's the right variety, it's a low GI food, low fat, low cholesterol, it's a great thing to have. Now, here's the key. If you do have a potato, make sure... if you do have a potato, make sure you make it. Don't let anybody else make it for you. If you don't, treat it just like any other processed food. That's a very safe approach, especially for a diabetic. If you're going out, if you haven't made the potato, you really don't know anything about it, you don't know what's happened with it, just treat it as a processed food. You can't go wrong with that. The other thing that you might want to do is you want to, might want to go with the safe option. And the safe option for diabetics has always been sweet potato. See, one of the things about sweet potatoes is that the food industry doesn't abuse sweet potatoes like they abuse normal potatoes. They're a lot cleaner in the preparation as well. If you go to a restaurant or if you go out, if you can get a sweet potato dish, you will generally find that they are prepared much closer to their natural form. So going with the safe option is easy. Now, there is, if you do choose the safe option, sweet potatoes, which really isn't a potato, but we call them sweet potatoes, there's a couple of things that you need to know about them, which is very important, by the way. So the way you prepare sweet potatoes makes a difference in their GI, and there's a very simple key to it. The GI of a 150-gram sweet potato boiled with its skin for 30 minutes is 46. That is extremely low. 46 is a GI which is so slowly metabolized that it won't spike your blood sugar levels at all. However, here's the key with sweet potatoes. That number rises to 94, which is pretty much double, if the same sweet potato is baked for 45 minutes. You see the difference? These dramatic differences come from the way that the starches in sweet potatoes gelatinize during cooking. Foods that turn viscous or jelly-like in your digestive tract have a lower GI because of the gelatinous substance slowing the release of nutrients in the food. Baking your sweet potatoes instead of boiling them changes the quality of their starches and transforms this root vegetable from a moderate GI food to a high GI food. And here's the key with sweet potatoes. The key is, do not overcook. As a matter of fact, when you're making sweet potatoes, the trick is to cook them for as short as possible. Now, on that note, I'd just like to open up the call. And if you've got any questions or comments, observations, or you would like to contribute to the call in any way, please do. So I'll just open the call for any comments. Star 6 to unmute yourself, by the way.
Peter, it's Robin.
Yes, Robin.
When you say when you go to a restaurant, a sweet potato is a better option, is that like going to a restaurant recently, they had salmon and a sweet potato mash?
Yes.
Which I had.
Yep.
Is that suitable?
Well, that is a far better option because the sweet potato is not doesn't vary on varieties. So potatoes as such, your normal standard potatoes, you can just pick up potatoes off the supermarket floor or shelves or whatever, and your GI can vary from 50 to 110 based on the variety. So that's the first issue that you've got. Now, if you go to a restaurant, Robin, and you're sitting down, you've got no idea what variety they've used.
Yeah.
The other issue, of course, is that you're sitting down and then you don't know how they've prepared it. Have they used margarine, butter, what have they done? Which is sort of a similar problem to what you will have with mashed potatoes. However, generally speaking, with mashed potatoes, when they're prepared, they actually use less of those sort of ingredients. So in my way of thinking, when you go out, by far the better option is sweet potato, yes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot less things that are not known with sweet potato. It's a lot more stable. Whereas with the normal potatoes, there's a lot of question marks about what's been done with them, how they've been prepared, their GI and that sort of thing, right? My approach with going out is that I avoid all of those sort of foods because ultimately I really... not sure, even with the sweet potato, because if it's cooked for a very long time, the GI has changed anyway. So you still need to be careful.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's very hard.
Well, potatoes are difficult when you're going out. And this is the purpose of this call, to make everybody aware of this.
So
you really don't know what...
Sorry, when you bake them at home as well, they change as well.
Yes, but only if they're baked for 45 minutes. So if you bake them for a much shorter time, they don't change.
Right, so if you cut them into much smaller pieces and only bake them for, 15, 20, they're okay.
Yeah, that's great. It's okay. So only when you hit that 45-minute mark. Okay?
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden... their composition changes and they become an extremely high GI food.
So if you have charisma, say, and leave the skin on and bake it, that's okay? Or a Nicola?
Yeah, well, anything that's the lowest GI, that's what you want to go for. And you want to leave it in its natural state. So what you would do is you would bake it with the skin. And it's fine, and it's a low GI food then.
Oh, that's really good to know, Peter. Thank you.
All right? But you just need to be aware of that because, people aren't aware. I mean, one of the things that, has been bandied around a lot is, potatoes cause diabetes. Well, there's no studies that show that's the case. There's no studies that show that potatoes actually cause weight gain either. No one's actually proven that. But when you actually have a look at the straight GI and how they're made and prepared and how the GI changes and varies, we know enough to say, well, that's not a good place to be at. That's not a good spot to go to. So what you really want to be doing is making your potatoes in a way, if you're going to use potatoes, where they're safe to eat. And that's keeping the GI down.
So if you just did... the sweet potato or the good potatoes, and left the skin on, chopped them into chips, literally put a spoonful of grape seed oil in a bag, rolled them around, then dry fried them in the oven, that would be okay.
Yep. Great. Yep. Absolutely.
Excellent. Cool.
Absolutely. Right. So again, yeah, it's exactly right, Robin. What you really need to be thinking about is, like I said in the presentation, when you go out to a restaurant, because you're not really aware of what's going on, right? You don't know what's happened. Ideally, those foods should be treated as if they were processed because they can vary so greatly.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, say, cauliflower or broccoli or something like that, that doesn't have those wild swings in GIs like potato does.
Cool.
And so you really need to control how your potatoes are done, especially if you've got problems with sugar levels, right?
Yeah.
because the minute you start having something like potato chips, you know, they're high GI, you start having things like fries where, you know, the McDonald's ones are a classic. The amount of ingredients they have is not normal. It's not just potatoes. I might actually put it on the notes, a link to an article that we wrote up on McDonald's French fries. It's frightening. But people don't think twice about it. They look at it as potato. It's fine. But it's actually not. It's a highly processed food. But even in a restaurant situation where they're just adding things to it, the minute you start adding things to potatoes, you really need to start looking at it as a processed food. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's good. Mm. I wouldn't dream of having a Macca's chips, but I once or twice have had a little potato, but mostly the sweet potato mash at a restaurant.
Yeah, well, what we've done at home is we've pretty much stopped using potatoes, and we just stick with sweet potato because we now are used to the taste. We like the taste. There's nothing wrong with it. And it's a much more stable vegetable to deal with as far as GI goes, even at home. You don't have to worry about the varieties that you buy. You just get sweet potato. That's it, and you're fine. So it makes it a lot simpler, right? Now, the other approach, and this is what we say in the program, that we should really avoid the use of potatoes. The reason why we say that is because it's actually quite confusing, as you can see. For a start, there's not enough studies out there to say categorically, this is exactly what's happening. It's all sort of studies that have been done that are bringing in, you know, other lifestyle issues and all this sort of stuff, and it becomes very murky. So because it's a very confused area and very hard to understand, it's very hard for people to follow. The much easier option is just to say, just avoid it. If you're going to have a potato-like product or a potato-like vegetable, just stick with sweet potato. It's much easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've always hated sweet potato. That's been my problem. But after juicing, I can now sometimes tolerate it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you hate sweet potato, that's fine. Just do your research on the varieties that you're buying. Just pick your varieties.
Yeah.
And at home, if you're making it at home, just make it, you know, so that you're not modifying it in any way, because that really plays around with the GI. The best is to have it.
The best is to have it anyway.
With the skin. Sorry?
We don't have them very much anymore either, although I used to have them every day.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing wrong with having them, right? As long as you know what you're doing. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, no, that's really good to know, Peter. Thank you.
You know. Now, keep in mind that with the lifestyle change that you've undergone as well, one of the interesting things is that, you know, for many people, potato was like a staple thing. You know, you had to have potato. And when you think about why people actually eat potato, it may not necessarily be because of the taste. It's just to fill your stomach up. It's a filler for your stomach.
Yeah.
It feels like you've eaten something, right? But if you've done a juice fast and now you're experiencing all these wonderful tastes, on the scale of how you taste things, potatoes probably rank pretty low. So, you know, although we use them occasionally and we'll have... I find sweet potatoes got a little bit more taste. That's how I perceive it now. But even though we might have a potato here and there at home, I can tell you now that there are many other things that you can have which far, far exceed the taste experience of potatoes. So that's just something to think about as well. Potatoes in a lot of ways are like bread. People can't imagine living without them. Just like they can't imagine living without bread, you know.
Yeah, so, must have been on one of those.
Yeah. Now, someone else was saying something? Or was that my imagination? That was my imagination. Okay, any other comments or questions?
Peter, this is Sandra. What about microwaving? Is that okay? Like microwaving?
That's another kettle of fish altogether. Mm. Okay, so microwaving can change the consistency in ways which we don't even understand and know. So I have been unable to find any solid data on microwaving and potatoes.
Okay.
That's the simple answer. Okay. The only data I've been able to dig up and find has been on baking and cooking potatoes. That's it.
Mm.
Okay. So I wish I could answer that question, and I can't. Mm. My approach to those sort of questions, Sandra, is this. If I can't see any solid research data on something like that, I just avoid it because who knows?
Yeah.
Microwave is a modern invention which is known to change the way that foods behave, the structure of foods, and who knows what it's doing.
Yeah, right. I was just thinking it's like a lot quicker, isn't it, to microwave a potato. You know, it's only 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, well, it's a lot quicker to nuke anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of microwaves, right?
But it's not good if it changes it, is it?
Yeah, what is it doing? Well, we're actually going to have a look at microwaving a little bit down the track because that's a very interesting subject in itself. There's been a lot of interesting thoughts about microwaving. We'll have a look at that. We'll actually run a session on microwaving.
Mm.
But that's the answer. I don't know. There's not enough data on it.
No. Okay.
Any other questions? No? Okay. If there's no other questions, I'll just start to wrap it up. So, ladies and gentlemen, as I always say, and I'm going to raise this every single time we have one of these calls because we really need to keep refocusing on what makes things work for us. You yourself are the key to your success, and you can do it. Now, most of us have finished the program, and we're travelling down this journey of, staying healthy and keeping ourselves healthy. Most of us have experienced some very interesting and fascinating changes. Gone from diabetic to non-diabetic. Gone from being overweight to normal weight. Gone from high blood pressure to normal blood pressure. High cholesterol to normal cholesterol. High triglycerides to normal triglycerides, and the story goes on and on and on. Many of us are actually operating at a very different level, so we can actually see those benefits, and it's really important to keep refocusing on what we need to do. And we really should be refocusing on this every single day, not just once a month like we do the course. But if you can refocus yourself every day on the following: perseverance is a big one. Perseverance is what makes the long-term changes happen. The problem why people don't experience long-term changes is because they don't have the perseverance. They let it go. Getting along is a big one. When you make changes like this, they are very significant changes. The last thing you want to be doing is saying to people, you're doing the wrong thing or whatever. It's my lifestyle. This is what I do. I'd like your support and that's it. You'll get the most mileage out of that sort of attitude. You'll also be able to help more people that way than any other way because people will watch. They'll look at you. They'll say, wow, you're actually feeling good, you've lost weight, you look fantastic. I want some of what you've got. And so having those sort of people around you really strengthens your ability to keep moving forward, strengthens your perseverance. Confidence is a huge one. That's why we run these programs. Confidence. Now when someone says to you, potatoes, you're confident about what you're talking about. Confidence in what you do is important. If you're arming and ahring, then it's difficult to know where you're going. Whereas if you're confident with what you're doing, you know exactly what's going on. You know, when I go out, and I go out a lot because through work and that, when I order my dishes in a restaurant, I always avoid potatoes. And people ask me, why are you doing that? I can confidently say to them, I don't know what I'm getting. And they say, well, what's the significance of that? So again, confidently I say, if I have the wrong sort of food, it's actually going to put an enormous amount of pressure and stress on my metabolic system. In other words, the sugars go up, the insulin goes up, and the body goes into a whirlwind trying to deal with this situation. And as an ex-diabetic, I can't afford to do that. So having the confidence to know what you're doing is really, really important, extremely important. Organisation is super important, being organised. In other words, you know, preparing yourself for every day. One of the things that we don't really think about a lot is food in many cases. We just treat it as something that, oh yeah, whatever. But there's a few things that really sustain us and make our health go up or down. One of those things is what we put in our mouth. So the question is, why wouldn't you be organised in a way where you know you're going to put the right things in your mouth? Organisation should be something that's always on top of our mind. The other key to success is resilience, being resilient. We live in a world where we have advertising coming for us thick and fast. We've got all sorts of foods coming for us thick and fast. We go out into social circles and we've got stuff being handed to us. Being resilient and understanding to be resilient is a big one. But if you can take all of those five keys and put them together, you will have no other option but to actually be successful. So you are the key to your success, and you can definitely do it. Our next session, ladies and gentlemen, will be on the 10th of November. It's almost Christmas, believe it or not. And, yeah, it's scary. But for next session, we've actually chosen the topic of vitamin B12. This is a very, very fascinating and interesting topic, especially for people who have decided that they're going to put, for example, meat aside. It becomes a very interesting question. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to delve into vitamin B12 because it's a very important subject. It's something that we all need to think about. And I believe that vitamin B12 should be measured along with our vitamin B12 levels should be done with every blood test, diabetic blood test that we do. But I'll talk about that more at the next session. Now, you'll be able to register once you receive your lifestyle maintenance follow-up email from this session. It will be online. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much for being a part of this call. I've absolutely enjoyed it. I hope that it's been helpful for you. It's clarified a few things about potatoes and what to do with them and what not to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to seeing you or hearing from you on the next maintenance call. And as usual, I will be on the call to the last person leave. So if you want to hang around and have a bit of a chat, please do. And thank you very much. It's been a lovely night, and I look forward to catching up next month. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks, Peter.
Yes, thank you, Peter.